and brightest day, in blackest night, all other podcasts tremble in fright. Losers cower before the power. Orange is lust, and blues you can trust. Indigos feel, and white ones heal. Yellow scare, and green ones dare. That sapphire love and black hands glove will rock your foundation without hesitation. Chad and Mars face evil's might. Respect their power, for they'll make you see the light.
Hi, everybody. I'm Chad Bokelman.
I'm Mark Marble.
And this is the Lantern Cast.
Episode 630.
What a significant number. 13th annual Mark and Chad go to the movies, if my calculations are correct. I believe that is correct.
That's probably correct. It probably would make sense it would be correct, considering this we're in our now, or this will be our calendar year for our 13th year doing the show. God help us. Oh my God, I can't. Gives me agita just thinking about it sometimes. But yeah, I think that's probably correct.
We'll break it down for the people. What are we in for tonight?
Interesting list, probably. For those who are not familiar with this episode, what Chad and I do is we basically break this down into our top five movies that we are looking forward to in 2026. We also kind of mentioned the middle of the pack, a lot of things, just usually mostly rambling through a list at the end of things that we are somewhat interested in, but not good enough on any level to make the top five. And then we have the old monkey crap list, which are the movies that we're not looking forward to at all, which, of course, does not necessarily mean we won't see some of these movies. It just means on the anticipation scale, it means absolutely nothing to us. So that's the usual breakdown of how we approach these.
3 pounds of monkey crap. Like friends or family would probably drag us to see it. We'd probably be curious if it showed up on streaming, you know, stuff like that. So, if somehow a new Michael Bay Transformers movie were to show up, that would easily count as 3 pounds of monkey crap. As you know, like, I'm interested in big robot fights on the screen and seeing some cool CGI like that with Transformers, but do I really need another Transformers movie? Probably not. I say that as I actually downloaded Transformers 1 the other day, which is obviously not a Michael Bay, you know, CGI fest or whatever.
Oh, the animated movie?
Yeah, it's actually pretty good. I know I'd heard lots of good things about it beforehand from people, but it was like $5. I heard good things, and I have all the other Transformers movies. So I was like, you know, what the hell? Why not? So I picked it up and I watched it the other day, and it's pretty darn good. I'm not even like a Transformers guy. I didn't grow up with the franchise or anything. So it was really good.
This might only be the 12th, Chad. The first episode we did was in 2014.
Maybe. Okay. Well, yeah, regardless.
Yeah. Episode 177. It was the first one we did, which is still shit scary because we only started at 170.
When we came up with it,
the concept is certainly closer to 13 no matter what. I'm just saying, looking at the act, March 26, 2014 is what shows up as the first Mark and Chad Go to the Movies episode.
Well, it makes sense we did it early because we were trying to find ways to get you acclimated to podcasting so you could.
Well,
that's why we did the first episode was the toy thing, right?
Yeah. But I think beyond that, even looking, because the majority of everything we did in the beginning, other than 170, was we had to dig through all the issues.
Oh, yeah.
Because smartly, Dan and Jim were avoiding doing reviews of those issues because they didn't care. So we had to go through a lot of those. So, because that's even what it says in the description, that we took a break from current issue reviews. Because we needed a break.
Yeah, so. Putting in our dues. All right, so we start with our top five. So who's going first?
I had this figured out in my head based on the way I have these ranked. You go first for number five.
Okay. My number five is a movie I just became aware of as of composing this list. It is actually called The Bride. It is out on March 6th. It is directed and written by Maggie Gyllenhaal. It stars Jake Gyllenhaal, Christian Bale, and Jesse Buckley. I'm familiar with those first two, not the last one. But as you may guess from the title, it is a movie about the Bride of Frankenstein. I don't know what to say about it because I haven't had it hasn't been on my mind a lot. Obviously, I haven't had time to sit with it as much as I have other things on this list, so my thoughts on it aren't very developed. I will say Maggie Gyllenhaal has a pass in my heart because she was among the cast that made participated in one of my favorite movies of all time, Stranger Than Fiction with Will Ferrell. Does that mean this is going to be a great movie? Does Maggie Gyllenhaal have a massive track record in terms of directing and writing? I don't know. But I'm willing to give it a shot anyways, and see what happens here. I will say in this may mean nothing because I did pull up the IMDb credits to check about producers and stuff like that, just to see if I could find any correlation between this. And from what I could tell, there wasn't, but I watched the trailer and the trailer kind of reminded me of one of the trailers that we got for Birds of Prey. The Harlequin Birds of Prey movie. And kind of maybe a little, and I haven't actually even seen this movie. I definitely saw the trailers, but Joker 2, I can't say that those
words. Folie à Deux.
Yeah, that one. The trailer sort of reminded me of that for The Bride. So I'm not sure if that's just, because we have crazy woman here, in terms of the bride herself, making her demeanor is very Harley Quinn in some way, so that might be where I'm drawing the correlation. But I'm curious about it. Now, there are other things that are in my honorable mentions that are actually on Mark's list that could have taken the five spot, but in the interest of making sure Mark had his numbers and as much as much of his picks as he could, and I had as much as my picks as I could, this is just where The Bride ended up fitting in. So new to me, but I am immediately very curious.
I will admit, I think this is me. I think that trailer looked horrible. I think I had heard of that project before I saw the trailer. I've seen the trailer a couple of times now in different things that I've seen. I just think it looks horrible. Christian Bale is good in anything, so him being Frankenstein is intriguing. But this is on my monkey crap list. So again, it's not something that I'm 100% tell you I won't see in a theater, depending on how things fall into place. But I can tell you that I have no desire to go see this in the theater. I just think it looks really, really. It's a really, really, really weird take on the whole Frankenstein, Bride of Frankenstein thing. So I would be...
I will say, I don't know if this will work, but I am excited that it might. Because if it does end up working, it's going to be a unique film.
Yeah, and that would be the appeal for it. I would be surprised if this movie works as far as being overly successful. I just don't see the appeal of this, even though it's the horror genre. I don't see it. But stranger things have happened.
For sure. All right. What about your number five?
All right. My number five, and this list is interesting because almost the last few years, there's definitely been about seven movies that have almost, which is why we usually, the last couple of years, we've kind of had a number six, a real serious honorable mention. This year was straightforward that I there were five movies that went over to the left side of my column and that's the only, there were only five. So it was kind of interesting on that level. So number five for me is Star Wars, The Mandalorian and Grogu. Yes, season three of The Mandalorian was not particularly good, but I am interested enough to see what they're going to do with this movie. I do like the characters. I do like the Favreau slash Filoni verse for the most part. Well, partially what they've done in live action anyway. The Ahsoka stuff to me was less successful, but overall, but the stuff in The Mandalorian overall, I like. So I'm interested in it. Do I think the movie's going to do particularly well? Probably not, especially coming off of lackluster third season. But it intrigues me enough, and I know I want to see it. So that's pretty much the main reason it's making my top five at number five.
It's interesting because it's the first Star Wars theatrical movie in several years.
Yes. Yes.
It's going to be hard, though, because like it's got a line to walk. So is it going to be more of a true like standalone movie, or is it going to feel like a really expensive episode?
I think it'll be standalone. I think the real question, of course, and we'll probably talk about this more next week, that the real caveat that comes into play here is there were some stories about what the future of this, you know, so-called Filoniverse was going to be, which obviously that future. And they were painting a relatively bleak wait and see view on that future. And that obviously seemingly will the brakes might not be being pumped as much now that the news is coming out, which seems to be more solid than reports we've had before that Kathleen Kennedy may finally literally be out, like soon be out, officially announced that she's out with Filoni being one of the two replacements for her. So if that would be the case, then obviously the Filoniverse is in some way, shape, or form all but guaranteed to survive into the near future. But still, I think it'll be a standalone. It probably has, knowing Filoni, it will be, and Favreau is the one, obviously, who's directing it, that it will be more of connecting the dots to where they want to go, ultimately, since yeah. Since there has always kind of, well, not always, but since The Mandalorian hit and they started bringing some of these characters in and introducing new characters and the ones from Rebels and things like that, there's always seems like they were building. Once that happened, we got to that point. They were always building to like to some kind of Avengers like event with all these characters coming together. So we'll see. I just hope that I have faith in Favreau. I think Favreau is a really good filmmaker. So I think at least even if it is just a standalone movie and it doesn't move the needle all that much, I'm still hoping it's going to be entertaining.
Yeah, I think and these aren't questions that we're going to answer. Just like I haven't had access to Disney Plus in a while, but one of the things I did watch when I did have access was The Mandalorian. All of season one, I think some, if not all of season two. I haven't seen anything since. So these questions that I have, we're not going to answer here. So we'll jump into four in a second. But like, I think my questions on this are like, why theaters? Who is this even for? What really even makes it different? And I think my hesitation is less about the characters and even like the story they're going to be going for, and more about whether or not Star Wars knows what a movie is supposed to feel like again.
Yeah, I think there's legitimate concern about that. I mean, I think Favreau's done enough movies that I think he's probably it's smart that he's doing this one. Because of the familiarity with the characters, I think I'm more comfortable and have more confidence in this than, let's say, Starfighter, even though I can understand because of the fact that it's something new that might intrigue people for Starfighter. But again, Starfighter is something that seems to be a Kathleen Kennedy pushed project. So since I have no confidence in Kathleen Kennedy and her creative decision making or judgment, that gives me pause too. But let's see. Yes, it'll also be interesting just to gauge with a small g exactly what this means for Star Wars. Because yes, it's been since The Rise of Skywalker since we had a theatrical release. And while this is something, as you mentioned, it may be viewed as just a glorified extension of a TV show, which may not be a natural draw for a large portion of the audience. It still will be interesting to see what kind of reaction it gets, because it still is dealing with characters that are fairly popular. So it'll be interesting to see. It'll gauge where Star Wars is on some level. So that is beneficial by itself.
All right, number fours.
Number four, it was actually the only thing. Number four for me is the only commonality we had on our original list. So Chad's little preamble there about essentially taking one for the team by including the bride was because we both had the Odyssey on the list.
Mm-hmm.
So the Odyssey is my number four, which is intriguing unto itself, since when I stopped to think about it, it's actually the first Christopher Nolan movie that I actually give a damn about since he finished the Dark Knight trilogy. So, I mean, Dunkirk had some interest. I never watched it. And Oppenheimer never had an interest for me. And the other one he did.
Did you end up watching Oppenheimer?
No. Actually, no. The reason why I'm trying to remember if Oppenheimer ever came on HBO Max. I want to say that
I liked it. I think it's good.
Yeah, the topic doesn't intrigue me all that much, especially since I watched Fat Man and Little Boy which I kind of thought that was a pretty good version with Paul Newman and John Cusack, and I just didn't have a great desire to see that. And whatever the hell the movie, I forget the name of the movie that he released during during COVID. I never had an interest in that movie. I historically have always liked the Odyssey story. I still remember seeing like an old version of that sucker they used to play when we were in school. One of those movies they would show you when you were in class. I remember watching the Odyssey. And Odyssey is inherently interesting just because Odysseus is an interesting character. One of the few kings that Achilles could stand. At least if you remember.
Odysseus or Odysseus?
It doesn't
matter. Oh, I said Odysseus.
Odysseus, Odysseus. I don't know if it matters all that much. Odysseus, yeah. But at least if you remember the Troy movie, one of the few kings that Achilles actually liked was Odysseus. It's a naturally entertaining story. Am I thrilled that Matt Damon is playing the main character? No, I don't think Matt Damon is really best suited for that character. But
Matt Damon.
But I think I like the story again. They're playing obviously fast and loose with some casting with Zendaya. What is it? Zendaya is going to be Athena, isn't she?
I don't know about that.
But yeah, so it's kind of playing fast and loose again with kind of the Greek mythology a la like what they did with Thor and Norse mythology in the MCU, though you could explain that one away a little bit more based on how they established it. It's intriguing. And of course, because of the role of Odysseus in the Trojan horse mythos, and that was his brainstorm, his gem, his stratagem. Cast looks good. I like the story. So it appeals to me. That's kind of one of those historical dramas, and based on, you know, obviously Homer's classic story. So that's enough for me to have it on the list.
Aren't there rumors that he's going to be doing the Iliad too?
I have not heard whether he's going to do the Iliad, which is kind of funny because I think the Iliad always gets overshadowed, which because if I did, I can't honestly tell you 100% if I read either one of them. But I know if I read one of them, it was the Odyssey. I think I have read the Odyssey. I think I read the Odyssey in school. I don't think I ever read the Iliad. Which one's the Iliad is about the Trojan War, isn't it?
It's been so long, which is actually kind of my point. Like it was going to be on my list too, definitely number five. It would have been.
Yes, it's the final weeks. It's the final weeks of the Trojan.
War. It's just before comic books, which, you know, we don't need to go into my comic book origin yet again. But I didn't get into comics until after high school. Which I graduated in 2005. My interest in a mythos, my first big interest in a mythos was Greek mythology / history, because they always, the way in which they gave you Greek history like that, and I guess in some instances some Roman history as well, was like these, you know, these heroes of Greek history were presented in a way that it was almost more lore than fact. Like that sort of a thing. So it was sort of a mixture of history plus supernatural god monsters sorts of things. So I always really liked that. Like, for instance, one of my favorite movies as a kid was Clash of the Titans.
Yeah.
I love that shit. So, you know, when I heard that Christopher Nolan was going to do the Odyssey, I was like, oh shit. Like, that's going to be either something I'm going to sleep through or it's going to be awesome. It's gonna be a literal epic. So I guess my question with it is, and why I would have put it at five instead of like a four or higher, is I'm just worried. Like, yeah, we've seen like a trailer or two or whatever at this point, but like, is Nolan, I'm unsure if Nolan's doing a grounded historical take, or is he leaning into the mythic gods and monsters side?
Well, the problem is, answering the question, it may not be so simple, because part of the story is both. I think dealing with like the Cyclops and things like that, I believe is part of the actual story in the Odyssey. I think so. I think there's going to be a mixture of both. I mean, obviously, if Athena and technically is coming in, has a role in the movie, or is talking to Odysseus or whatever, then you're crossing the line. I think it's going to be more historical, but I think because of the time frame that they're in, there's going to be elements of both. It'd be interesting if he did the Iliad, since technically the Iliad is a prequel to this,
yeah,
since that was the first ones.
All right. My number four is Supergirl, which comes out June 26th as of right now, starring Millie Alcock and Jason Momoa. By the way, I didn't realize this until I was reading the cast list. David Krumholtz will be playing the character of Zor-El. For those of you who don't know David Krumholtz, you'd probably know him best as the head elf in The Santa Claus, but I know him best as Charlie from Numbers, the TV series. I really enjoy David Krumholtz whenever he appears in things. I think he's an underrated talent. Do I think he should be like an A-list actor? No, but like I enjoy him when I see him. And it's directed by Craig Gillespie. So this one, it's a DC movie, yes, so clearly it's going to make my list, but like it's a DC movie where the creative choices actually make me curious instead of just sort of checking a box and, you know, adding the DC thing to my list, because I could have easily picked like Clayface, right? So like why Supergirl? It feels like this is a DC project that actually has like a maybe even a point of view baked in. And I'm not saying like a preachy point of view or anything like that. I just mean like, you know, a lot of them are popcorn type flicks or whatever. And they try, and especially at a larger superhero level, they try to appeal to the general audience to get as much people in as possible, as opposed to actually trying to make any sort of point or whatever, or try and say something deep about the character. It's just, you know, fluff for fluff's sake, so that you can have a big budget summer movie with a superhero on the screen. But I like what I am seeing so far. I don't have as much experience with Millie as others, but this is going to be one where obviously she's going to have a featured role as opposed to like a supporting role with House of the Dragon and stuff like, which I didn't watch House of the Dragon, but I know that a lot of people know her from that. So I'm not saying like she's going to be the future of DC and watch this movie and, you know, watch this space and Chad called it or any of that stuff. But this is the first time clearly she's being asked to carry a film at this point, which it's not going to be. Forgetting even who it stars, it's not a sure thing. So it being chosen as the number two theatrical outing for this DCU, it's on here for curiosity, not necessarily blind faith. I know that I don't have a lot of experience with Craig Gillespie's films. Because I looked into it, I was trying to do some due diligence for this film, or for this episode. I know he did I, Tonya and Cruella. I've not seen either. And another movie people apparently associate with him quite quickly is a movie called Dumb Money. But it's not, apparently it's not, and I saw somebody online had written this, they called Gillespie being put in as the director for Supergirl, that it wasn't a safe, you know, a quote safe anonymous studio hire. It seems like a deliberate choice, and that person was curious about what that means for Supergirl. And so am I. I liked the first trailer, as we talked about when you and I spoke about it when the trailer dropped. It does feel sort very Guardians, at least with this first trailer outing. So we shall see. You know, it's definitely, as with all DC projects, including Lanterns, which we're not talking about today because TV show, not a movie. But it's a wait and see at this point. You can give me all the news in the world, but I have to see the project to make any firm stance on it. And I am very curious about the choices they have made for this film.
It's in my middle of the road list. I have an interest partially in, I have somewhat of an interest in seeing it. Clearly I will see it. I do have my reservations again about the storyline and about the approach that they're going with. I like Millie Alcock. I think, as we said before, to me, she's the thing this thing has working in its favor more than anything else. But I need to be convinced. I need to be convinced more to make me more excited for it. And I doubt, to be fair, I truly could be made excited for it. I'm going to see it. But, I mean, I wasn't excited to go see Superman. So if I'm not excited to go see – I wasn't excited to see Superman last year, I'm not going to be excited to go see Supergirl, a character I have much less of a tie to. But it will be interesting just from the perspective that this is going to be the first theatrical movie in this new universe that James Gunn is not directing, writing and directing. So it's going just like our Lanterns show will be. These are the first real tastes of live action that are part of James Gunn's universe. But James Gunn is not directly involved in creating and or writing, directing. So, yeah. Well, I do one. I am curious. There are elements in it that make me curious. I want to see if they tie it in either to the Lantern show at all, or obviously it's safe to say they're going to tie it into the Superman sequel by the end. But we'll see.
Yeah. All right. My number three.
Yes.
All right. My number three is Michael, which is April 24th of 2026. I didn't write down the director's cast or anything because I'm not familiar with any of them, but I did write down that it's written by John Logan, who wrote quite a lot of things and did the screenplay for things like Alien Covenant, Spectre, Skyfall, Gladiator, The Aviator, The Last Samurai, so on and so forth. That is a well-established writer in Hollywood. Talk about the performance or critical reception of those individual movies all you want. The movies themselves are big movies. The thing we know from past lists that I go for biopics, specifically about musicians, and you know how I liked Bohemian Rhapsody and Rocket Man and all of that stuff, or even something that's not necessarily a biopic but sort of a homage, which would be like Yesterday. So it's no surprise that I picked Michael. Michael Jackson is a very complicated figure to go after, and I don't think this movie, like, we've seen the trailer, it's obviously very grand and bombastic, but what has me interested in this film is not just the history and the impact of the Michael Jackson, the artist, on the music space, but whether or not this film actually takes the time to wrestle with the complexity of him rather than just, you know, going for the flash and pretending that doesn't exist, that side of him doesn't or wasn't ever a part of who he was. So I think that's sort of why it's number three for me, despite my love of biopics, because I think if it turns into like a flashy celebration that's just all pomp and circumstance, I'll be a little disappointed. But if it's willing to not necessarily call out Michael Jackson or whatever, but like if it's willing to sit in that discomfort, it could be an interesting film. More than just what we see in the initial trailer.
Yeah, I have seen the trailer. I am not nearly as much of a fan in general of movie of music biopics. I don't want to make a blanket statement about biopics in general, because that's really dependent on, and I think it's, when it comes to biopics in general, it's just dependent on what the subject matter is and who it is. I mean, I watched Rocket Man, but that's more in my wheelhouse based on what I like and who I like. But I didn't see anything that drew me in. I mean, I thought the production values look pretty high. I like when they're doing the thriller stuff. That's pretty cool. That seems pretty faithful and how they're recreating it. I'm actually the only part about that movie that, and that's in, this is in my middle of the road list. The only thing that really intrigues me about this is I'm curious to see what kind of interest there really is from a box office perspective for a Michael Jackson biopic. I think that kind of intrigues me a little bit. I don't really know where the general consensus is on Michael Jackson is at the moment, and nor how much of an interest there is in, like you said, we don't really know entirely how they're going to cover the story. How much of his life are they going to cover and aspects of his life? So I think there is a little intrigue there on that level, but I don't, yeah, I'm more curious about the interest in that the masses are going to have for this movie and how it's going to do at the box office than me going to see it. Like, I will almost guarantee I will not see this movie in the theater. Would I watch it on streaming? Depending, I forget which studio it is. Depending if it would be available to watch for free, of course. At some point, that yeah, I would probably watch it, but I'm not going to go see it in the theater. I can tell you that. But I am curious to see how other people react to it.
All right, you're number three.
Number three is arguably the one that we could spend the most time talking about, period, probably on anybody's list. So number three for me is Avengers Doomsday. Couldn't put it any higher, which speaks volumes about, again, where the MCU is and where, despite the marketing campaign that we touched upon last week, and probably next week we'll talk about the X-Men trailers and the Fantastic Four Wakandan trailer in more detail. But the marketing campaign for this movie and everything that, which you had some good insights on, your concerns about the way the movie's being marketed at this point. And I started thinking about this movie more too on that level, what my concerns are. My major concerns for this movie, number one, is you hear a lot of rumors, stories about how Steve going back in time is going to be the catalyst for the whole multiverse collapsing. And I'm going to have a big problem with that if that's true, because it makes inherently no sense based on everything. They're going to have to seriously retcon their explanation of time travel to say how that would even remotely be possible, when all Steve could theoretically do is just create an alternate timeline if he was never supposed to go back with Peggy. So why would that create, by just him going back in time, why would that be the catalyst for the entire multiverse collapsing? Now, if they want to say he created a closed loop, which should not exist, and the quantum physics view of time travel, and that caused some kind of cataclysmic chain reaction, I could live with that more. If you want to say it had something to do with the Infinity Stones being removed, that even though the Avengers were always destined to go back to get the stones, maybe that's the reason why it was only 1 in 14 million plus that worked, quote unquote, because the chain reaction of that one time working was going to be mega, because the Ancient One was actually much, much smarter, shockingly, than Bruce Banner. And just plucking out those Infinity Stones, even for a fraction of a second, was enough to cause the cascading collapse of multiple timelines. Because remember, they took the stones from multiple timelines, multiple universes, if you will, or realities. Then maybe that caused the cataclysmic fall. But if they blame it on Steve, not just because that you're taking the noblest character and dumping all this garbage on him inadvertently, I don't think that. And it's not just being a fanboy. It doesn't make any sense that would cause that. But I'm also concerned with, and that's a big one for me, because if it turns out, oh yeah, they give us a cursory explanation that, oh yeah, Steve went back, without actually delving into why him going back caused that chain reaction, that would be bother me, because it doesn't make any sense to me. But it also bothers me that even though the marketing campaign, with the exception of the last trailer, the one that leaked today, is all about the past and all about the characters that we know we care about from previous universes and previous studios and previous phases, that this one's really concentrating on mostly stuff that happened in phase 4 through 6, which has obviously not been not been an era that most people think that highly of. So my concern is, despite the marketing campaign being heavily towards stuff that most people like, the movie is still probably going to have to deal with a lot of characters from phases 4 through 6, which could be problematic as far as how the audience reacts to the movie. But it had to be on the list. I'm interested in seeing it. I just couldn't put it any higher than the number 3.
Yeah, I think you mentioned it. We talked about it last time. My worry is that it's all anybody's talking about right now. And it's January in a movie that doesn't come out until December. My worry is they are intentionally building hype and are going to be talking about Doomsday all year to artificially inflate the hype for the movie, because we've sort of placed this moniker on films like Thunderbolts or Fantastic Four. This one really is Marvel's last chance. It has to be.
Yeah.
So them talking about it so consistently a full year in advance and trying to keep it in the front of our focus for a full 12 months, if that's what they end up doing, that can't do anything but make you feel anxious. I think to sum up with Doomsday for me personally is it feels like it reeks of desperation what they're doing right now. And there's two very clear ways that they could be reasons that they could be doing that. And one is just purely financial. It's like is there really actually a doubt? Like, let's say it's a great movie. They have full confidence in it, 100%, so on and so forth. It's still not necessarily a bad idea to build the hype machine this far out in advance just to keep it because maybe you sell that many more tickets. But you also think of the flip side of it, of going, well, they scrapped all the Kang stuff. They've hired the Russo brothers. They've got all these actors. They're tying in all these other franchises. They're sort of moving up their plans because rumor was they were going to end up at Secret Wars eventually anyways. But now we're having to maybe theoretically get there faster than they had originally planned. Phase 4 and so on and so forth has not been largely successful. This is the last shot. You get the whiff of desperation off of what they're doing. And I don't know that I can have full confidence in it yet. Yeah, there will be some trailer or TV spot or announcement of a character that we didn't expect that I'll be like, oh shit, I'm in. I'm sure. But I'm still worried.
Well, the other reason to be worried, which you kind of reminded me of this when I was, and I had thought about this too, that when you think about it, the Russos have the unenviable task of having to do about like 50 times the work that J.J. Abrams had to do for Rise of Skywalker to try to salvage just a trilogy, thanks to Rian Johnson taking the blowtorch to all the threads, the breadcrumbs that were laid out in the first movie that you could build on, which he chose to destroy all of those threads and then kind of left you in a burnt out forest blindfolded, twirled you around 50 times, took the blindfold off and said, good luck. Because you had no way of knowing what direction you could go in, which would be safe, which might get you to where you needed to go, let alone which direction you came in from, because that's what he did. So what the Russos have to do is 50 times more difficult than that, because they have an entire saga which has meandered and has almost no connective tissue, with only half the projects being connected to the multiverse at all. Some of those are only tangentially connected, like the end of the Marvels, which the entire movie itself has nothing to do with the multiverse. Just Monica getting stuck on the other side, which may very well have been a last-minute addition, because we know the post-credit scene with the X-Men-verse, which is probably the X-Men-verse that we're going to be seeing, almost assuredly, the X-Men-verse that we're going to be seeing in Doomsday, that was a last-minute addition, a last-minute shoot. So we don't even know, maybe at some point she was never trapped behind enemy lines, if you will. But even so, that movie had nothing to do with the multiverse. But they have to do an entire saga, which has essentially failed, plus a refocusing, arguably maybe for the second time, when originally, from what we hear, Kang wasn't supposed to be the big bad. Then they fell in love with Jonathan Majors and made him the big bad. Then they realized he wasn't working, and he kind of gave them a gift on a silver platter by his legal troubles, which made it even easier for them to move away from him as the big bad. That all these things, the Russos have to come in here, and they have to make they have two movies to do it in, unlike J.J. Abrams, and they probably have about 6 hours to do it in, unlike J.J. Abrams. But still, they have a lot more heavy lifting to do to make a coherent vision to not just salvage phases 4 through 6, but to set up a status quo where going forward, you maybe have reestablished enough interest in the MCU where you can fix the problem that Feige screwed up the first time, which was not having the proper succession plan and not thinking things out too solidly about where how you were going to live in a post-Endgame, post-Steve Rogers, Tony Stark world, that you have a chance to kind of like reboot that, not just literally or figuratively, but both. So you have a chance for that. That's why, at least from what you hear, the idea of making Doomsday a direct sequel to Endgame makes a lot of sense. Because that way, even though characters from phases 4 through 6 are going to have to be in this movie, for better or for worse, and some are for the better, clearly. Yelena's for the better and things like that. But the point is, completely bypassing the majority of the plots and storylines on the disconnected tissue of phases 4 through 6, just to make say, hey, the real roots in Doomsday go back to Endgame. That makes sense to me. Just like we talked about, even Doctor Strange being the linchpin for destroying the multiverse, that would make sense more than Steve Rogers, because we were told in the Multiverse of Madness that the biggest or greatest threat to the multiverse was Stephen Strange. So it would make sense. And we already saw him playing fast and loose with the multiverse in Spider-Man and in his own movie. So that would be more of a logical reason why the multiverse could be collapsing. I think it's a lot of heavy lifting. The Russos obviously have the chops to be able to handle tons of characters. They've already proven that. But there's a lot of stuff they have to try to make coherent. Plus, it could just be an event movie where people like seeing it, but it doesn't mean the status quo, what's established afterwards, is going to be enough where people are going to care much anymore. But plus, it's a movie that's probably going to cost close to like $800 to $1 billion just to make and market. So even if it's successful, or is it going to be successful enough to really turn a profit? It might not. You could have a movie that could be a $1 billion-plus movie to making at the box office, and it still might not necessarily be guaranteed a profit, because it could cost like $600-700 million to make, and then you throw in the marketing budget. So like I said, I figured that would be the one we would talk the most about, but I couldn't rank it any higher because of my concerns and where the MCU is now.
Yeah. All right, you're number two?
Right on cue. So my number two actually is Spider-Man Brand New Day. That one I could put higher because it's Spider-Man. Because we have much more of a track record with Tom Holland Spider-Man movies being successful, though this is a different director. So that kind of gives you a little bit of maybe. But I have more faith in Tom Holland Spider-Man. It always makes you nervous because, you know, Sony and Marvel don't always work 100% well together, which makes you wonder what Sony really thinks about this marketing strategy. That's probably why they're doing so much marketing now, to get it out of the way during the initial wave, because you know at some point, probably past February, they're going to really have to switch into gear marketing Spider-Man. And then plus, when Spider-Man comes out, then you can start ratcheting up the marketing for Doomsday again, because you know there'll be a trailer on Spider-Man, and they're going to re-release Endgame in September. So that's when the full court press, the final marketing can come out. But Spider-Man sounds interesting. Like, I read some things about what the plot could be. Some of the things, if it's true, I don't really know if I like, but it could be intriguing. I do like the idea of Bruce Banner. You know, we know Tom Holland pretty much always has a mentor. Spider-Man always has a mentor pretty much in every one of these movies, whether it's Tony, whether it's Nick Fury, whether it's Doctor Strange. So the idea of it being Bruce Banner in a way makes sense. I mean, it makes sense on multiple levels because they both obviously have ties to Tony, even though, of course, Bruce would not have knowledge of that, since nobody knows. I mean, he would have knowledge that Spider-Man and Iron Man were close, but he wouldn't know who Peter is until they introduce each other. Plus, they never interacted. Those are two characters that never actually interacted in the MCU before, not that we know of. But I'm intrigued, you know, whoever Sadie Sink is playing, that is yet to be 100% confirmed. Her stock has kind of been rising, too, since the end of Stranger Things. I'm intrigued by that movie. I want to see how they juggle the again, it's the behind the scenes things that interest me with that. It's part of the reason why this movie took forever to get to where it is now was because of the clash supposedly between Marvel and Sony, what they wanted this movie to be. One wanted it to be like more like a bigger multiverse movie like the last one, which was so successful, which would make sense, and that was Sony. And one wanted to make it more of a ground street level Spider-Man movie, which was Marvel. So this obviously is somehow splitting the difference between the two. So I'm going to be interested to see how that works. So I'm interested in this. I do want to. It's been way overdue to see Spider-Man, which is kind of funny since we got two Spider-Man movies like in two to three years. And now we haven't had a Spider-Man movie. It's going to be what? Almost six years. Almost five years by the time, four and a half by the time this movie comes out. So this is the one MCU movie that they can screw anything up. This is the one that you have the most, that you probably, if you were going to bet, there was one movie or one character they can't screw up, really. Spider-Man would be the one.
Yeah, it could have been on my list as well. What's appealing to me about it, at least at right now, and I haven't dove deep into like leaks about plot and stuff like that, but so I could be wrong about this. But what's appealing to me is this idea that I believe this movie is supposed to be less about Spider-Man saving the universe and more about Peter Parker holding his life together. You know, he's the people he loves don't know him. His family's gone. He's on his own. He's struggling to make rent or pay bills. Maybe we'll see him working for the Daily Bugle. I don't know. Being a photographer, stuff like that. Like, I just feel like there's more root Peter Parker stuff potentially in this, which is what makes me more excited for it, because we've seen like nerdy, awkward, very smart, techie Peter Parker, but the stuff that a lot of people identified with growing up in terms of, you know, that was the whole point of Peter. He's just like us. He has the same struggles as us and so on and so forth. That's what Marvel injected into him. He was us, but with superpowers. I hope we get more of that. And this would technically sort of be our first chance to see that from Tom Holland's Spider-Man.
Again, depending on if some of what you hear about this movie is that the core of this movie, even if Peter Parker doesn't realize it, is that because he's essentially lost everything of who he was, and the Peter Parker side of him kind of got flushed down the toilet thanks to the end of No Way Home, that he's throwing himself more into being Spider-Man. That is his primary focus. That basically his identity is wrapped up in Spider-Man, and the movie is supposed to be, again, from what you hear, is about him one way or the other kind of being forced to realize that you need both halves, that you can't ignore the Peter Parker side. You can't just be Spider-Man. You have to have both. Either way, I think I can certainly see that being interesting. I want to see how this works. I mean, introducing the Punisher in it. I wish it excited me more. I don't care much about the John Bernthal Punisher. I didn't care about him much. And the Netflix stuff, I have not watched Daredevil Born Again because I just don't care about that Daredevil all that much. I know I'm in the minority there. I don't care about the Charlie Cox Daredevil much at all. So I don't care about this version of the Punisher all that much. I have a little bit of intrigue just because I have a strong tie to Punisher, and based on the fact when he was introduced in Spider-Man comics and things like that. So I have a natural interest in seeing Spider-Man and the Punisher interact, because if you know, you know, regarding their history. But we'll see. I think there's enough elements in this movie that make it intriguing. That's why it will be interesting once they start ratcheting up the marketing campaign for this movie, because but you don't want it to be as completely overshadowed by a Doomsday.
Yeah. Quick anecdote. My only thought about Spider-Man interacting with the Punisher comes from Civil War, the comic book, where Peter rejects everything that, you know, because he figured out what Iron Man's doing in Civil War and all that stuff, and he's already revealed his identity. So, but now he's leaving Iron Man's side and he's trying to escape down through the sewers, but the Thunderbolts find him and beat the hell out of him. But the Punisher finds him and takes him to Cap's secret base, And that's when Cap and Punisher have that standoff, and Cap beats the shit out of Punisher, and Punisher won't raise his fist back to Steve, won't fight him back.
Yeah.
And he respects him too much. Yeah. That's the only Spider-Man Punisher interaction I've ever internalized.
Yeah, I go back to Amazing 134 and 135, which was the introduction of Tarantula. But it was that's the second appearance of the Punisher. Obviously, the first appearance of the Punisher, I believe, was 129, which is the Jackal, the infamous issue, the nice yellow cover with Spider-Man in the bullseye of the Punisher. And of course, that's the famous issue that I cut up to make a scrapbook out of when I was a kid. But there were lots of the second appearance of 134, 135 means more, because that's when you kind of started establishing the relationship that the Punisher and Peter Parker were going to have for the majority of the 70s into the early 80s, how they kind of got off on a really wrong foot, but then they kind of at least had some kind of working relationship together, potentially at times.
My number two should be no surprise to anybody, because I've sort of talked about it a little bit in an episode here or there. Project Hail Mary, March 20th, 2026. We got Ryan Gosling, Milan Vanthrub, directed by Phil Lord and Christopher Miller, who've done Spider-Verse stuff, Lego Movie stuff, so on and so forth. Written by Drew Goddard, who wrote The Martian, and obviously Andy Weir, who actually wrote The Martian book. And Andy Weir also wrote Project Hail Mary, the book. The reason it's two and not number one is because, as much as I love The Martian, one thing The Martian has that Project Hail Mary does not is Ridley Scott. The Martian is a fantastic movie. It's one of those movies that I will rewatch over and over and over again and not get tired of it. I will put it on in the background when I don't know what to watch, or if I'm doing some chores around the house or whatever. They're a few movies like that, and The Martian is one of them. And I hope that Project Hail Mary is much the same. I'm about halfway through the book itself, because I when I saw The Martian, I didn't know The Martian was a book first. So my first exposure to that concept was The Martian movie. I have since gone back and read The Martian and enjoyed that read. So now I want to try the reverse. I want to try reading the book before seeing the movie. So I'm about halfway through the book. Lots of the same comedic voice, lots of the same scientific research. Obviously, there's a bit more fantastical elements to Project Hail Mary. The idea, for those of you playing along at home, if you haven't heard, is basically the sun. The sun is losing its luminosity by very, very small increments, but it's losing it at a consistent rate, enough that in X amount of time, enough to be worrisome to humanity, it's going to impact our climate much faster than you would think. And then they discover, every star is experiencing the same drain, except this one star way out there in space doesn't seem to be, for lack of a better term, infected the way other stars across our galaxy are. So they need to send a mission out to that star to figure out why that star is unaffected by what's happening to our sun and all the others. So maybe we can fix it, whatever. And then along the way, obviously, the main character runs into an alien. We don't know what happens there, so on and so forth. I'm not going to spoil the whole thing of the book, but the main plot, the reason for going into space, is that thing with the stars. So because of running into the alien species, because of infected stars, there's a little bit more supernatural, sci-fi elements there, as opposed to leaning 100% into the science of it all that Andy Weir did with The Martian. But he still put a lot of effort into it for Project Hail Mary. So it's almost like I'm looking at Project Hail Mary is a spiritual sequel to The Martian to scratch that same itch. And I have a lot of confidence that it will, It's just, it's missing the Ridley Scott element, and I'm not sure, I'm not the film buff that Mark is. I know Ridley Scott is a big name, and I know why, but I'm not enough of a film critic or fan to know, to identify Ridley Scott's voice, but I know that it was a big deal to have him on The Martian to begin with, so I'm just worried that the lack of Ridley Scott here could be worrisome, but otherwise it's got all the elements of something I'm all but positive will be a successful movie.
Considering how Ridley Scott's been over the last like 5 or 6 years, I wouldn't be overly concerned that he's not involved in the process. it might very well be a plus.
Any thoughts on Project Hail Mary?
I am interested. It's definitely right near the top of my middle of the road list. It probably would have been in my top 10 if I was doing a top 10 list. Trailers look good. Ryan Gosling looks appealing, which, you know, sometimes Ryan Gosling can, he's a good actor, but sometimes, you know, he can be more appealing than others. Of course, it depends on the role that he's in. Like, what was it? Drive, right? Drive was when he was the getaway driver who in the stunt man or whatever the hell I think he was. Yeah. Too. That was a much colder kind of character. So he has a lot of range, and he's still the Hal Jordan we could have gotten instead of friggin' Ryan Reynolds if he had just, I guess he was wise not to do that movie. I guess the script of what there was of it was enough. He was smart enough to make him stay away. Since that, by all accounts, is exactly who WB wanted desperately to play Hal Jordan for that 2011 movie. I think it looks fun. I think it's interesting. So I am looking forward to seeing it.
Yeah. My number one, easy to guess, I'm sure. As of right now, slated for June 1st, 2026, Godzilla Minus Zero. That is a shock to nobody. I'm absolutely positive. But I will say, it's Takashi Yamazaki again doing his thing. It's featuring the same actors and the same characters. I think the only hesitation here could be the fact that, you know, the concern of a sequel. Godzilla Minus One was such a shock in terms of how good it is, and how good it, and what a surprise it was, and so on and so forth. There could be some reason to be concerned about it. And putting a Godzilla movie typically at number one, aside from Minus One and everything, you know, if it were to be like a legendary movie or anything like that, normally I'd agree, but Minus One earned this. That movie reset not only my, but other people's expectation for what a Godzilla movie can be. And almost reset it back to Gojira, because Gojira was supposed to be a story about the consequences of the nuclear age and the unbridled progress that took. So taking it back to, man, we cared about the human characters in a Godzilla movie for the first time in how God knows how long. There's not a lot to elaborate on here because we don't know much about Minus Zero right now. I know I had heard in December, and I Googled it now just to narrow it down, but it was like the first couple of weeks of December, there was an article that came out that James Cameron apparently had reached out to Takashi Yamazaki to offer to help him with the movie, and James Cameron's not credited, so you know, Takashi didn't take him up on that, so that's good, because we don't need to add anything else to the pie right now. Minus One worked. Minus Zero looks to have all of the exact same elements Minus One did. Let's not play with the formula, because I'm down as is.
I did like the first movie. I'm curious about The thing, in a way, the thing, so some Godzilla fans are probably hoping for this, because we know that's kind of what gets you into trouble with the legendary verse, the Godzilla colored glasses you view the world through, that they unabashedly made Godzilla the bad guy. and what, in Minus One? Yep. So what makes you nervous is that at some point, even if it's not this movie, that it's going to, that they're going to morph him at least into kind of like maybe an anti-hero, if not a hero. And I guess it depends on, you know, there's lots of speculation on which monster is going to be the villain in this movie. So like the villain as in, or the opposition, I should say, because depending on how it goes, there may not be any heroes in the movie. They're just two villains, because they're both, it's just, you're waiting for them to fight, but the reality is you're not rooting for either one. You just kind of hope they destroy each other.
Yeah, some people have said Hedorah, right?
Yeah, because he's got a special affection for Hedorah. A lot of people have speculated, even though based on the time frame of Godzilla Minus One, some people counter that by saying that society wasn't really big on about pollution and things like that, and the concerns about that. So the statement would not necessarily be realistic enough to echo what your concerns were about nuclear war and figuratively and literally the fallout from the end of World War II.
Yeah, for those of you playing along at home, Hedorah is the big
smog
blob, swamp monster, representative of, as Mark said, pollution.
Yes, the smog monster from whatever.
A sort of spiritual mirror to Godzilla's representation of the problems with nuclear energy, the problems of pollution. Yeah.
Yes. But that was firmly planted in the 70s when it was made, when it was, that was a legit concern of society, and it started to become one in the 70s when pollution started becoming a major issue. Some people have suggested, I mean, obviously the play on Minus Zero always opens the door for Ghidorah. Though, you know, we've been Ghidorah to death, so it would make sense to avoid that. Some have said Biollante, that they could definitely make a good statement on with Biollante.
Yeah, that could be fun.
But I still was concerned with the way they made him Wolverine at the end of the last movie, so he could just heal himself from anything. Because it's like, when you do that,
often had a healing factor.
Yeah, just, but not like that.
Yeah.
I mean, the way they did it at the end of the movie, it makes it virtually impossible to really ever kill him, because he was about as killed, as dead as you could get in a way. But yet, I mean, I don't know. That was one thing about that movie that I was not a fan of. I did not like. I think we could have done without so much of the. There are other ways, I think, that we could have brought him back, without having to go with, hey, look, he's Wolverine. But I am interested in it. That date has yet to be 100% confirmed. It is expected this movie is coming out this year, even if it's not going to be to the fall. But which I completely missed on my list until you had it. I noticed on yours, and then I went back and I saw that it is an unconfirmed date in June. But yeah, there is a date attached. But obviously, if that's true, we're going to be in the next few months, we'll start getting trailers for it. If not, then maybe it's going to be more of a fall release, which the first one was. So there would be a certain, obviously it wouldn't be December, because December is way too crowded as it is between Dune and Doomsday and everything else. So probably it could be a November release, which I think Minus One was, at least here domestically. But yeah, I'm interested in that.
All right, you're number one.
My number one, which will be out within a month and a half. My number one, God help me, is Scream 7. So Scream 7, really, I've said this, like I said a few years ago, when they did Scream 5, and I did my mini episode on that, it's not my favorite horror franchise by any stretch of the imagination, but Scream is almost like an unkillable, perfect horror franchise because of the rules they set in place the basic premise of what makes Scream Scream, they can keep doing forever. It's not tied to one person being the killer or one actor being the killer. Yes, you have one actor's voice doing the killer, but I think they've already made that deal where they can continue to use Roger Jackson's voice after he's dead. So that's locked in. So that's locked in for the foreseeable future. So you had the character basically always looks the same, but you've never had a repeat killer up to this point. You've never had the same. So you never had anybody like, oh, it's got to be Robert Englund playing Freddy Krueger. It can't just be Freddy Krueger. It's got to be Robert Englund playing Freddy Krueger. No, you don't have that problem. They already proved in Scream 5 and 6, you don't need to have Sidney Prescott as the main character in every single Scream movie and still make it work. Obviously, this one will have Sidney as the main character because of the shift after all the problems they had with the directors and Melissa Barrera and all this stuff. So I'm interested in it because there's so many dead characters that we know in some way, shape, or form, either their voice or their likeness will be in this movie, which probably means there's going to be some kind of spin on AI, since part of what Scream always does is talk about, has something to say about society and the genre. So having some take on AI and the infiltration of AI would make sense. But we know Matthew Lillard is back in some capacity. We know even Arquette's back, David Arquette's back. So a lot of people from previous movies whose characters are firmly dead. Well, you can make a case Matthew Lillard's has always been highly debatable. But we know David Arquette's character is dead, and Scott Foley's character from Part 3 is clearly dead. What they do with this, plus the intrigue of the characters of the killer seemingly being tied to Sidney's past, and even if it's not some of the obvious characters you might think it might be, I'm interested. It's also going to be Kevin Williamson. He's directing this movie, which could go either way since he's not really known as a director, more of a writer. But he's obviously of the two heart and souls of Scream, with Wes Craven being gone. He's the last one really left. So I'm intrigued. So I'm looking forward to, and as we're recording this, the rumor is that the second Scream trailer is supposed to drop on the 8th. So it's supposed to drop tomorrow, at least what I heard this week, that there's a strong possibility that we're going to get the second and arguably maybe the last Scream trailer tomorrow. So that's it for me.
What's interesting is that Scream over the years feels like one of the only horror franchises where the conversation around the movie is part of the movie.
Yeah.
Because you were talking about, you know, sort of how it's always commented on horror trends and everything. Is Scream still about commenting on horror trends, or is it become its own thing that it's now commenting on? Because I guess what makes this one feel necessary instead of just continuing the brand?
And that's why on some level it's intriguing, because until you see it, you're not going to know. It is the inherent danger if you start pumping these, and that's what they kind of have done from Scream 5, 6, and now, that Scream was never a franchise that was pumping all these movies out super fast. Now, you can make a case the original trilogy, they were relatively close, but there was like a 10-year gap between Scream 3 and Scream 4. And Scream 4, which I think Scream 4 is probably my favorite, in all honesty, that Scream 4 did have a lot to say about not just the genre, but how people react to the genre. And so did 5. 5 talked about people's involvement in the fandom and how they view it about the franchise and changes the franchise, changing stories versus what, you know, going away from what made something real and trying to butcher it too badly. And Scream 6 was about, I think Scream 6 kind of was trying to be more of a referendum, whether it was successful or not, talking about a franchise as opposed to a movie, or as opposed to being a sequel, that now you're talking about, you know, franchises and things like that. We don't know what the message, quote unquote, what the big picture view and what it has to say about either movies, horror, or society as a whole, we don't know yet. But again, because so many of these characters, these actors are coming back in this movie, that we know, realistically speaking, with maybe the exception of Matthew Lillard's character, some of the other characters coming back, the actors coming back, we know their characters are definitively dead. You can't really explain it away. I mean, Scott Foley's character got shot in the friggin' head at the end of Scream 3. He's dead. So is it just going to be their voices going to be dubbed over? Is it going to be AI, as in we're going to see these characters, you know, in videos and things like that, but they're still really dead, but because it's AI recreating? We don't know. But yes, the inherent danger with Scream is maybe if you're making one every 2 or 3 years, is it may be just like anything else. So I think that's the problem where, based on the concept of Scream, certainly if they took, you know, like three to five years in between movies, you probably would always have something you could say about horror and about movies in general and society in general, along with working it into plots and continuing on with certain threads that were not picked up on, that were left dangling or were always unexplored before. And there's a lot of those in Scream. That's one of the things Scream 6, I thought, did especially well. That of course, a lot of these things won't be picked up on now because they kind of moved away from Jenna Ortega and Marissa Barrera for the foreseeable future. But there were a lot of different ways they could have gone if they just had done Scream 7 with those characters, where they were going to go and dangling threads that still could come back, even with Sydney being the main character again, related to characters that were introduced in 5 and 6. So I'm cautiously optimistic about it. And since Lord knows we're not getting Saw 11 anytime soon, which I can't believe it's going to be 3 friggin' years since Saw X, and we still have no goddamn sequel to that, which is mind-boggling considering how good it was and how successful it was. But I got to pin my hopes on that baby.
You were talking a bit about, obviously there's a trailer still yet to come for Scream 7.
Well, there has been one.
Another trailer and stuff. So there's more to be learned about that. But you were saying with Scream 4 potentially being your favorite, do you think 7 is trying to recapture that kind of... I forget what you said, but it was like the sort of self-awareness of horror, or is it commenting on a different era of horror now?
Well, again, it's really hard to know. Scream 4 worked well, I think, and it's highly rewatchable. Scream 4, I think, to me, is certainly the most rewatchable of all of them. I had a really good cast. I think the fact that they took like 10 years off from Scream 3 to Scream 4 just made it more impactful. As far as when you look at it now, I don't think it went over as big. I don't think it wasn't as successful at the time, but I think based on the concepts of Scream, and then having the gap from 4 to 5, which was significant, I think it opens the door for that natural reflection and self-awareness from the perspective of understanding the genre and understanding, you know, because of course in Scream, in the actual Scream movies, the events of what happened to Sydney are in films in the Scream verse under the title of Stab. So basically, like Scream 1 and 3 all, I think, were like Stab 1 and 3. So all those things that happened to the real characters that we saw in the movie, all those things were made into movies. So there's a duality there, too. You have the contradiction between what really happened to the main characters and seeing their film version and having people view the film versions and how they view the, you know, Sydney because of the how things were, the movies based on all the books that, you know, Gail Weathers wrote that became the Stab movies. And so there's a duality. There's always been a duality with that, too. But it's hard to know when you're pumping these movies off in a relatively short fashion, if that's going to take away a little bit of what makes Scream conceptually unique and how you could keep going on, especially if you're allowed a gap.
Gotcha. All right, 3 pounds of monkey crap?
Sure.
You or me?
I'll roll through them fast. I don't have much to say about these. Obviously, that's why they're on the monkey crap list. So all I have on this list, 28 years later, The Bone Temple, since I don't care about that franchise at all. I still haven't even watched the last one that was been on Netflix for like about half a year now, it seems. Send Help, which kind of has the trailer is somewhat interesting, but I don't think I really want to see it in the movies. The Strangers, Chapter 3, another horror franchise that means nothing to me. Wuthering Heights, no interest at all. Plus, I think the trailer looks really weird for that. I already mentioned The Bride. Appears they're remaking Cliffhanger with a female protagonist. I think it's just a remake of the Stallone movie. No appeal. Toy Story 5. Again, tidbit, I think I've mentioned before, never seen any Toy Story movie. I like the rides. I like their Disney World rides, both of them, but I have never seen, I've never done the Slinky Dog coaster. To be fair, there's more than two rides now since they opened that extra part. But I've never had seen a Toy Story movie, so Toy Story 5 means nothing to me. Evil Dead Burn, again, don't care much about Evil Dead. The Clayface animated movie, I'll probably watch it, but again, it does. The character means nothing to me, and I didn't like what they did with Clayface and the Creature Commandos. Cat in the Hat movie does not look interesting to me at all. And the last thing I have is the Hunger Games Sunrise on the Reaping entry. That means nothing to me either.
So I've got a few. I've got Goat, which I saw a trailer for the other day and was pleasantly surprised. It's a Sony Pictures animated movie, a sort of Zootopia style, obviously not Disney because it's Sony, but it's like a basketball movie. So I don't know. It looked interesting, but no particular draw. Just like, oh, surprisingly decent trailer. A movie coming out very soon, probably maybe by the time people hear this, I don't know, or soon after when they hear it, The Rip, from Netflix, with
The Matt Damon movie.
Yeah, Matt Damon, Ben Affleck cop heist movie thing. apparently Narnia is coming back.
Yeah,
we're getting a Narnia movie, so I'm curious, general curiosity franchise-wise. Another general curiosity franchise-wise, they started marketing this one early. The Cat in the Hat animated movie. Dr. Seuss is a big, wide playground, and we haven't really touched that in animation since, what, The Lorax? So could be good, could be shit. Another, I'll probably end up seeing it because my brother-in-law likes this franchise, Super Troopers 3.
Yeah, I was surprised to see that they were making another one of those.
Yeah. Saw a trailer for this for the first time the other day. Didn't even know they were making this movie, but I don't know what to think of it. Madden?
Yeah, I think that's a Netflix. Netflix or a Prime movie.
Yeah.
I think it's Prime.
At this point, those movies kind of have to count because they're spreading out releases everywhere at this point. But Nicolas Cage as Madden, John Madden, and then Christian Bale is a part of it, and Will Ferrell's a part of it. I don't know. Catherine Hahn, like, it seems interesting. I liked Draft Day, but I don't know that this is going to be anything like Draft Day. and then last on this list is a movie that has been in development hell for a long time, was reportedly completed, and as far as I could research, was shelved specifically as a tax write-off, which prompted a lot of backlash. Coyote versus Acme is supposed to be coming out this year.
Is it getting a theatrical release?
I don't know.
Is it going to streaming? Because I don't know. I don't know either, because you were correct. That is a movie that's the John Cena movie. That movie got shelved. Yeah, there was that. That never made any sense why that got shelved, because there would have always been some interest in that. It's not like what they did Batgirl, Batgirl made sense if they really thought it was that horrible, that it would do more harm than good, then I can understand a little bit of the logic behind not releasing it. But
theaters, August 28th.
That one, I would be interested in seeing that one.
I'll run through honorable mentions real quick. Obviously, The Odyssey, Spider-Man, we're on there. Greenland 2, Migration is on that list. It's honorable mention because as much as I liked Greenland, the first one, it felt smaller and more grounded. And from the trailers, this sequel feels less like Greenland and more like it's just time for another big budget disaster movie. It doesn't seem to be focusing on the tension and the family focus that the first movie did. It just feels like all the shots in the trailer and it's just all devastation and big scale destruction, just like your standard movie, a disaster movie. And I liked what made Greenland a Greenland.
Plus, it'd be released by the time this episode comes out.
That's true. Super Mario Galaxy movie. I'm a Mario kid, so yeah. Clayface, I am looking forward to it. Again, interesting pick. TMNT, Echoes of the Ooze, a la from the Mutant Mayhem stuff. This is supposedly going to be having a... Splinter has been keeping a secret from the kids about their origins with relation to the Ooze. We don't know if it's, you know, one of the things we already know about their origins just as fans, or if this is something new they're adding to the mythos. Just curious there. This surprised me. I didn't know this until I was looking through movies coming out, and this one almost damn near made my list. Jimmy, a movie about Jimmy Stewart, is coming out this year. It seems to be filmed maybe by a company that makes like the sort of Christian movies and stuff like that. So I don't know, but I am curious to see it. The trailer looks not bad. So there's that. There's a movie, an animated movie we don't know much about called Ray Gun, which is about a detective, the last human detective in a world full of animals. That could be fun. I like a good detective movie. The concept kind of intrigues me. There will be an animated feature called The Dynamic Duo, which actually teams up Dick Grayson and Jason Todd. So curious about that. There will be a Batman adaptation of Nightfall. Part 1 is coming out this year, and Tim Drake is going to be the Robin. I am a Tim Drake fan, so we'll see how Nightfall adapts with this new universe. I'm not usually into horror. There is going to be a movie, I don't know if you've heard of this, Mark, called Gale, Yellow Brick Road. They're taking the Oz franchise.
Because it's in public domain.
Yeah.
That's a bad, generally speaking, this is a trend that needs to go away in general. Cause I've seen a bunch of movies like this. Like I saw one of the Popeye ones.
Yeah.
And I
Popeye
saw
the Slayer Man.
Yeah. I don't know if it was that one because there's two of them.
Yeah.
But I saw one of the Popeye ones. I did finally see the Winnie the Pooh one. And I saw one of the two Steamboat Willie ones. It's a bad trend, in general.
Yeah, it is, for sure. I will say too, another thing, it's a bad trend, but you would hope that one of these movies ends up hitting. Like, before the trend fully dies, like, is somebody going to do something interesting with one of these public domain franchises when it finally goes live like that? I don't know. But regardless. And then the last one that is on my list is a movie that I'm going to probably watch because of sheer devotion. The Muppet Show is getting a new movie. And I think it's a streaming service type movie as well. It's going to be coming out any day now, I think. It feels like the Muppets are dying. And I don't mean like that's the plot of the movie. But it feels like the Muppets as a franchise, as characters, as something that people want to see is dying off. And that makes me sad.
Yeah.
Because I believe they shut down the show or the ride or whatever at Disneyland.
Yep.
And then something was in the news today about how they got rid of the Kermit statue and sold the lot, stuff like that. So will this Muppet Show be thing? Because it's got Sabrina Carpenter and it's got Seth Rogen and stuff like that in it. Mm. And like, you know, will it be good? Probably not, just be with that. But like, it really sucks that we're sort of, it feels like we're ushering off the Muppets, man. And that I want to see this Muppet Show just because I want to show my support for the Muppets as characters.
No, I can see that. I mean, the good news is I believe the Rock and Roller Coaster is going to be repurposed, reconstituted as a Muppet roller coaster. But yes, they wiped out the Muppet, the 3D thing in Disney World, which was always, I mean, on one level, I always understood why they got rid of it because it was not overly popular anymore. It was a nice reprieve, as people was always saying, a hot day and or a rainy day. It was always nice being able to go into the theater and see it. But once they did the Galaxy's Edge and once they did the Toy Story Land and stuff, it kind of did stand out. It was a remnant of what Hollywood Studios used to be, which I kind of lament too. There's a lot of things because that was originally built exactly what it was. It was kind of like a love letter to movie making and how movie making used to be. So you had the backlot tours and the great movie ride, which a lot of people love and miss, even though that's where they made Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway now. But it's a whole different environment. So it is sad what they did with the Muppets. But I agree with you. It seems like the Muppets' impact on pop culture is waning.
Yeah, you're bill free.
All right, so let me roll through my middle of the road list. Primate, which is another one that comes out this week.
Been seeing a lot of marketing for
that. The main reason I don't want to see that movie is because let's move beyond the fact that we already know intellectually that having a chimpanzee as a pet is going to be a problem at some point. But I don't want to see Cujo with a chimpanzee where the poor thing gets bitten and gets rabies. And basically it's not even that, we hit puberty and now he's out of control. It's like, no, it seems like everything you see in the trailers and what you hear is that he just gets bitten by something. He gets infected. And that's why he goes maybe literally batshit crazy. I don't need to see that. That's just sad. That's going to just lead to like some old yeller like ending. I don't need to see that. Supposed to be Soulmate, which I guess is like an offshoot in a way of Megan, but it's like related to dating. I haven't seen anything about it, but I know it was supposed to come out this year. Greenland 2 is on the list, which I am seeing, by the way, tomorrow. Return to Silent Hill. Mercy, the Chris Pratt movie, which they've been pushing the hell out of. I already have tickets for that, too. Shelter, Psycho Killer, Project Hail Mary, Michael, Devil Wears Prada 2. I don't think I will see that, but it's in the middle of the road list. I did see the first. Mortal Kombat 2, don't really care. Scary Movie 6, which you and I talked about ever so briefly. Disclosure Day, the Steven Spielberg alien movie. Supergirl, Minions 3, Moana, the live adaptation. Avengers Endgame, the re-release, which like I kind of have jokingly told Chad, was this close to being my runner-up in my top six, number six. Street Fighter, Last Airbender, Violent Night 2, Jumanji 3, Dune 3, and Godzilla Minus Zero. Dune 3, it'll be interesting to see if they really stick to their guns and they don't move. I am so willing to bet you they will move. I do not think they're going to stay against Doomsday. I don't want to hear. I know it sounds nice saying Doomsday. It's real cute. But we all know Oppenheimer was a manufactured event to try to when the industry decided, hey, we need propping up, so let's try to push this. And while on one level it would make more sense for something like Doomsday, because at least they're appealing to the same audience, where we know Oppenheimer and Barbie had two completely different audiences. Plus, it was Oppenheimer that needed the help. Barbie didn't need any marketing help, to be perfectly honest.
Barbenheimer.
Yeah. Yeah. Barbenheimer, which what a crock of shit. Like, those movies have anything in common. Why, if you wanted to see a Barbie movie, why would you want to go see Oppenheimer? Talk about night and day. That's why you know. And also, it's a great testament to the lemmingness of human beings that they could be manipulated into, hey, man, this is an event. We got to go do it. So while Doomsday is cute and the audience would have more things in common, that's another reason why you probably wouldn't want to do it. Because why would you want to sacrifice? Because you know which movie's going to win. Avengers Doomsday is going to win. So why would you sacrifice your opening weekend, which is going to be, unless you're Avatar, and I wasn't kidding, because even with Avatar domestically, your opening weekend is still your opening weekend. That why would you sacrifice your biggest weekend to go against a movie that you know is going to kill you? And you're not going to have everybody split going to see both movies on opening weekend, no matter what. And if people really like Doomsday, they're going to want to see Doomsday again. So I would be stunned if Dune 3 didn't at least move up a week just to give them 1 week cushion before Avengers Doomsday. But do I want to see it? Yes. But even I'm going to say, well, if I'm seeing Doomsday the week, you know, when the Thursday it comes out, and then if I want to see it again, then that means I'm going to be kicking the can down the road another week to see Dune. So I think that I would be stunned if they can say anything they want now. It's almost a year away. I would be stunned if WB decides to keep that release date and not move off one way or the other, either a week before or a week after. But
I'm still surprised that Project Hail Mary is not in your, or is an honorable mention.
Well, like I said, there were five movies that came to mind real quick. The only one I could have bumped out would have been, I mean, which makes sense because I had it five, would have been Star Wars, would have been The Mandalorian. But I'm not that pumped by it where it's not in my wheelhouse the same way. And that's the only reason why. Did I like The Martian? Yeah, I like The Martian. Again, Matt Damon, I'm not a big Matt Damon guy. But he was good in that movie, and the movie itself was good. I think Ryan Gosling is a more appealing lead based on what this movie is supposed to be. He, you know, kind of like the, again, the unexpected, hey, I'm not really an astronaut, but I play one on TV kind of thing. Like, but they trained me to be one. That I think it's an intriguing enough concept where I think this movie could do really well. That's a March release. I think the window could be really good for this. Yeah. But again, so that's probably the reason. That's probably the main reason. That was borderline. But like I said, this was a weird list. I had five movies I brought over to the left hand side because that's how I do it when I write these. My tops are on the left, understandably so. The middle of the road's in the middle, and the crap is on the right. And I only had five movies on the left, and I didn't have to go search. Or usually, like, we have 5 to 7 movies on the left, and I had to narrow it down. This time I didn't dig any deeper because I had 5 right off the bat. It's like, I'm going to stick with it.
Yeah. All right. Well, if people want to tell us what they're looking forward to seeing in 2026 or what they think of our picks or whatever, what do they do?
LanternCast@gmail.com. The website is LanternCast.com. You can follow us on Blue Sky, Twitter, Facebook, #GLCast to track us down. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, wherever you listen to us on. Please leave us a positive review. YouTube channel is LanternCast Vids. We haven't pushed that in a while. Last but not least, and our Discord. If you need our Discord information, you can email us too because we haven't pushed that in a while. But if you'd like to send us a text or a voicemail, 708-LANTERN, and let us know what you think. And we have no idea what we're doing next week.
Whatever we want.
Yeah, probably.
All right, guys. We'll talk to you later.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.